Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, 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 hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to the 11th episode of Miscast.
Ooh.
What in the worlds? What in the worlds? What in the worlds?
Is that what you called the first one?
No, I called the first one A Whole New World.
Oh, clever bastards.
See, so now it's What in the World. This is our 11th episode, and each episode, using the expertise of our superstar co-host and special guest, who's very special today, we are discussing tabletop topics that we hope improve your generalship, expertise, and enjoyment of your gaming experience. If you've kept up with us so far, you know it's the podcast that talks nonsense, but some sense. And it's the podcast this week that's been going down celebrities losing their shit rabbit holes.
Ooh.
Like, if you guys remember Christian Bale on the set of Batman going mental. Do you guys remember this?
I read something about it, but I never actually saw it myself. But I can well imagine it, because he doesn't come across as too stable, does he?
well, yeah, exactly. Because the reason I did it, because I consume a lot of podcasts, as I've said before, and the Adam Buxton podcast touched on this, because he made a jingle of Christian Bale going mental. If you can remember, I can't remember what year it was, but he was on the set of Batman and some sound dude or something walked past in the background. Uh-huh. And he just went completely nuts.
Yeah.
But as part of that, though, he was being like really nice, but in a shouting way. And it's something that loads of the celebrities seem to do when they completely lose their, like, minds. Like, they're super angry, like, "Ah, I hate you, but you're so nice. You're just so nice." But they're just shouting at the same time. So if you haven't, go on YouTube and type in celebrities losing their crap in interviews. It's very, very funny.
Oh, you spend too much time on the internet, Alex. You really do.
Yeah, but that's in between working. I work long, so I have to watch stupid crap on YouTube.
It must be quite discombobulating to like spend all that time imagining being someone else, and then all of a sudden something happens and you realize you're in reality.
Yes,
yeah, like, I imagine it must be really difficult. It'd be much easier to lose your shit if your wires are all fucked in your head. So I feel for them.
I went to Worlds and I thought I was okay at Warhammer. I was so wrong. And I did lose my shit. No, I didn't.
Are you being a salty bitch at Worlds? Anyway, we'll get to that.
No, Christian Bale style meltdowns for me. I don't know about our guest. I think they were cool as cucumbers, weren't they?
Yeah, you were super calm, Oven. Yeah.
The rage and anxiety and feelings of, you know, maybe not imposter syndrome, that I internalized them perfectly then. Fantastic.
Yeah, see, there you go. Okay. If any of you listening are interested, yeah, type in Tom Cruise. It loses his shit in an interview. It's really funny.
There's a little part of me that either wants to see or be the person that does the up table.
As you flip the table, you actually want to flip it.
I want someone to be so salty that they just grab the table and throw it. Now, I know that's really bad of me, but I think before I die, that would be a great experience to witness.
Have you ever gotten close to that, Darren?
No, I've nearly caused people to do it.
at Six Nations last year, it wasn't intentional, but we had a table collapse and a whole Idaneth Deepkin and Caradhron Overlord's army imploded. Like a submersible into the middle of the table. Yeah, it was
like a submersible.
Yeah, sorry,
it's a bit current.
current affairs. Yeah, they can both fly anyway. KO fly fly in the sea anyway, so it's fine. Anyway, people are losing their minds listening to this nonsense. Right, we're going to get into it. So, my first co-host, you've heard already. You've heard his sexy serenades, and the now ex-world champion. He goes by @positivevictim on Twitter. It's Darren Watson.
I am not an ex-world champion, I'll have you know, Alex. I've not been to an event and had it taken up. I'm the world champion 2022, motherfucker.
Yeah, you're just like how Trump is still president.
Yeah, exactly.
Did I tell you know, last year the world's trophies weren't the best, let's say. They were 3D printed and they're pretty horrific. Did I tell you that I broke mine, and now where it sits on my trophy cabinet, it's right at the top and it leans forward and it looks like it's trying to commit suicide.
Symbolic in a way.
Getting the psychology right in there already. That's what this is, our psychology episode before. Great. Love it. How are you doing, Dan? All right? All good? Otherwise?
Not great. We had to put down one of our chickens today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, bless her, Winifred. For context, listeners, Rune, if you don't know, I rescue caged hens. And we've had Winifred for a good few years. This was the third time she was going downhill. And Alex, my better half, she doesn't like to watch anything suffer. So we made the decision to take poor Winifred to the vets today. And she went away. So, yeah, it was not the best day. But I try to think about what a wonderful life she had. They're pretty cool. They're pretty cool chickens. Certainly,
yeah, exactly.
When they come, I tell you this, when they come to you, they've got no friends. They're not allowed outside because if you let them just run around straight away, they'll break their legs because they're so brittle. That's how few nutrients they've got in them. And I always think to myself, no matter how hard a day I'm having, I'm not a fucking caged hen. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a great deal worse. And these they've said they're so tenacious. It's marvelous watching them regrow all their hair. And then when you first let them outside, they start scratting about for the first time. When we did this lot, they all started like making chicken noises, obviously, like bah, 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 for 45 minutes straight, you know. They all started shouting at each other when they were finally let outside for free. And I think it's wonderful thinking they're all going, fucking hell, look at this. This is great. Look at this. There's a fucking slab over here. I can fucking see it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's like the I'm too excited, but for chickens.
Yeah, exactly.
That reminds me of my journey from 2022 to 23. It was breaking my legs and then shouting in the end. Yeah.
The pictures of the your team in celebration, you can feel the joy in those. They're absolutely fantastic, and I love that you shared. There was an article, wasn't there, the largest Danish Instagrammer was mentioned you guys as well. So that image has been seen by 100,000 plus people. That's pretty fantastic.
It's been 100,000 likes, so I don't know that transitions to views.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty amazing. When we will be discussing this in detail of course. So I'm sorry, Darren, about that. But as you said, nice life. And now you get to talk to everyone on the internet about Warhammer. So hopefully that makes you feel a bit better.
I have been talking Warhammer all day with everyone because a new GHB is about to drop.
Well, exactly. So there you go. Everyone's going mental with that one, eh? Right. Shall we move and get our next lovely host in then, and we can get into it. So he's back. We did have a mini-sode where, actually, to be fair, Darren and Luke did correctly predict the top two, but we won't talk about the top three. It's the sexy sock seductor himself. You can find him at aim four with the number Sockcess. Aim for Sockcess on the gram. He's at OJ180 on Twitter. It's the Owen Jackson.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello,
you're
Owen.
You're really wasted, you know, healing people and whatever. You really are, you know. There's newspapers out there crying for headlines that like the caliber that you can deliver on this podcast every time.
Thanks. Thanks, mate.
I'm good. How's things with you, Alex? You well? I'm just flipping it back onto you very quickly.
That's fine with me. I was going to tell you some lovely new some medical jazz, if you like, Owen.
Please do. Furnish us.
It's around jazz music.
Right.
Jazz.
Talk to me.
There's a new paper from John Hopkins talking about the health benefits of jazz.
What? Yes.
Yep. So now you can tell people that you're just being healthy.
Brilliant. Yeah. Also,
improve memory, mood,
really?
And can improve your verbal abilities just listening to jazz. So for anyone out there just like Owen who wants to listen to some jazz, now you have doctor approved.
Brilliant. Also, I found out this month that if you take naps, then that means that your brain gets bigger and is better for you as well. So,
what do you mean it gets bigger?
Well,
what's the bigs are going to get?
Well, I mean, depends how much room you've got in your skull, but supposedly it's. But hold on,
All I do is nap.
You still can't use the bloody buttons on the computer. So that's clearly not working either.
Well, I also found out today that the reason why you feel lethargic after you eat is because when your body breaks down the food, especially carbohydrates, it creates the melatonin that helps you go to sleep. So that's why you feel drowsy. God, this isn't a...
You thought this was a Sigma podcast. Yeah. And actually, it's a medical podcast. Sorry, Darren, what did you ask?
What about when you masturbate or you ejaculate? That often gets me to sleep. Is it the same thing?
You eating when you masturbate?
Depends if it's Wednesday.
There's different sorts of websites for the ones I've been looking at. The different websites I've been looking at. The websites and, I'll come back to you on that.
We'll do some research.
Yeah.
A-B testing.
If I must.
Owen, can you mute, please, while you do the research? Thanks.
Yeah, okay, no problem. Yeah.
Good. Right. Good.
I'm fine, thank you. I've not played a game of Warhammer in almost a month, and I feel great.
You gave yourself a bit of a break after Worlds.
It was an enforced break, I'll be honest with you, mate. I worked for 3 weeks solid. And I was talking to my friend Leo earlier, a friend of the show, Leo, and he was like...
From episode two?
Yeah, from episode two. I did do 21 days of work in a row because I kind of delayed some stuff to do Worlds. But then before Worlds, I did 6 weekends of tournaments. So I'm just exhausted. But exhausted.
Well, that sounds like small fry for you, Owen. What's going on?
Well, I know that you don't really know what you can do until you do it in all things in life, right? I'm sure that, you know, our guest Rune, like the level of commitment and, you know, how deep he went in the game, I'm sure that didn't maybe see what that was going to be like when they started off on their project. It's been really good, but I do feel a bit frazzled, but I've got that kind of nice mix of content and exhausted at the same time. So
I mean, it is a lot of two-tone games you had to play. So
see, this is a misnomer. I played one two-tone game. I played one two-tone game and everything else was a bloody grind. Obviously, I wasn't doing it right.
You just weren't KOing right. Let's have a chat.
You've been on it, Owen, about that since you found out he was on KO.
Yeah, you know what? Real talk, like maybe some content 20 minutes into the recording that people might be interested in. Yeah, you learn a lot about yourself from a gaming point of view when you play different armies. And I think I was actually probably a bit too tentative as a player to really get the most out of KO. You know, I would always get five battle tactics and, you know, and my grand strat jet on the whole. But if you're taking a Rolls-Royce army and you're expected to get 17 plus points from the matchups and you're being put down with the defender, you know, you're put down and you're choosing the battle plan. You're there to get those points. You know, when you only get 14 or 13, then it doesn't, you know, it's not, you're not delivering as much. So I do think that a slightly more aggressive player, such as like Fabian, for example, on the English team, you know, he would be more of your archetypal KO player because you perhaps you really do push early and you go for the big cripple and then the game is over in two turns. I don't know. That's me thinking out loud.
Well, that's what we're here for, Owen. We're here to listen to your thinking out loud. So
I've not picked up the Sky Dwarfs. I think they're going to be very good in the next edition, but I'm moving on to Pastures New.
Yes. And if anyone doesn't know what that is, go and see Owen, as I said, at Aim for Success on the ground.
Yes, thank you very much.
Right. Should we get a lovely guest in?
Yeah.
You've heard his lovely accent already. He's tall and sexy like all Danes. And if you don't believe me, you should look at the AOS Worlds thread where the picture of all these sexy bastards is. And they're all tall and sexy. He's done an insanely awesome Twitter thread. So again, if you haven't read the Twitter thread, go and read it. It will, A, it's just interesting, but B, it will actually make you better at the game just reading it. So go and read that. He's been on national television and radio, I think. And so therefore, he's now an actual Warhammer celebrity. And the new LS champion, Rune Holes. You can find him at Holes to Rune on Twitter. It's Rune Holes, everybody. Woo. Rune.
That was beautiful. They gave me way better introduction than they did on TV. I wish they had shouted like that. Yeah.
You got it. Once you're a new world champion, you got to do the, what's his name? I always forget the damn guy's name.
Michael
Buffer. Thanks. Yeah, you got to do a bit of Michael Buffer. You're a champion of the world.
That's a reference I don't know, but yeah.
He's Michael the boxing Buffer. Announcer. So you know whenever they come out to box and he says, let's get ready to rumble. There's that guy.
They don't.
Yeah, that's what I told my wife the day after.
Yeah. I love it that you know the pitch of this podcast already, Rune.
How you doing, Rune? How you feeling? Buzzing?
Yeah, buzzing. But as Owen said, I also had my had a bit of break afterwards. So a culmination of a lot of work and like fairy tale for us in Denmark, I guess.
Well, you were saying that you guys were a bit disappointed the year before, right? And so this year, coming back round, and as we mentioned again off air, not only winning it, but beating the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth place teams.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Smashing it.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like we to say myself, we won 2 years ago, but it was only 12 teams contesting that year. That was the Corona year. In Milan.
Way
smaller. And I think that the teams that were there, which were like good, like in the top teams, that was France and the USA, for instance, they knew we were good going into the next year because they had seen us play. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody else really knew. It was like we weren't known to be good players. And then the next year, we got our ass kicked back to France by England.
Well, you did pretty awesome. Like you beating them all and winning the whole thing. So that's great. How's being on national television now that you're a celebrity?
Great. That was fun. Like I was on two times actually at the same show. And first time was Friday morning and I was shooting on my webcam in the garden from my house. And
it was like a breakfast show, something, was it?
Yeah, it was like a breakfast thing, like 2 minutes. And after that, the host, or not the host, but somebody working there asked me if I wanted to come in a couple of days later. So we did that, brought two guys from the team. And
oh, cool.
I thought it was cool because they gave us, I think they gave us more respect than at least I would. They gave us as much as I'd hoped for.
They were expecting facts that he knows.
Yeah. And then, like, we're just normal guys, right? You know, and I think that link that we weren't like people from
a dungeon,
from some a dungeon. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was kind of. I was searching for that word.
We're just normal for yourself, guys. Some of us like dungeons. Thank you very much. So yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good. And yeah, we had a good time there. 100%.
Awesome. Yeah, that's good. I mean, the whole thing has been awesome. As I said, your Twitter thread is great. So, as I said, if anyone hasn't read it, please do go and read it, where you talk about your kind of list and your experience and stuff, which is awesome. We'll talk a bit about that now. So, but before we get into all of that with everyone, we need to start with the most important subject, and that's clocks.
We can finally do it.
I mean, it's a hot topic, right?
It really is. So, for those of you that don't live on Twitter, one of the England team decided to throw a bomb into the internet and talk about clocks. So, we're going to do it. Owen, clocks.
Yo. Yeah.
What's going on?
I've actually had a very, quite an in-depth bit of back and forth with somebody who was had the opposing opinion to myself, you know, sort of saying that they felt that it was putting undue pressure on players and things like that. So there's a lot of interesting discourse around it. I think it's the fear of the unknown, just like, you know, a lot that happens in politics and society and all sorts, you know. Like, I think when you, you know, come up to a table, obviously everyone's coming at it from, you know, people play the game for different reasons. And there's like an idea that the clock is this kind of ultra competitive way of like putting extra pressure on your opponent, and they might only play a few, you know, a few tournaments a year and they're there for fun. But I think the counterpoint to that is, you know, that the game should be played in such a way that both players have an equal amount of time. And it's just a very clear and easy way of showing that. I think when you get to world's level, there are ways that people weaponize the clock, which is another element again. But thinking about them in general play, like, it's just the fear of the unknown. I genuinely think, I can't believe that no content creator has said this is how a clock works in a game of Age of Sigmar. Like, yeah, I think someone should do that.
You've done it. YouTube video coming up.
Just a quick little recording saying this is how it happens. This is what, because, you know, and again, the other thing around like, oh, it's not fair. You're putting your opponent, like putting players under pressure. Well, it's also not fair if you turn up to a tournament and you don't know your rules and you're really slow. And then there's another player who's trying to rush through and you don't have a fair amount of time. And then it doesn't come to a satisfactory conclusion. So I think people should just try it. Much like food you don't like or music you think you don't like.
Like jazz. Yeah,
just like jazz. So you don't know, you know, you've got to speak from a position of strength and try it. Try it, you might like it. Just like, no, don't say that, Owen. Just like...
what, Owen? Yeah, please.
No, I'm definitely not saying what I thought.
I almost said what I thought you were going to say.
What, anal sex?
Yeah.
I love the way everyone was thinking it. aside from that, I guess lots of people want to like have that sort of game that they would like to enjoy, that they appreciate, right? And so I guess it's how you go into a game, right? Lots of people necessarily didn't want clocks because they want to have a different experience, I guess that's the what people are talking about. But what do you think, Darren? Clocks?
I was very anti-clocks going into Worlds, and I came out of Worlds last year thinking, what a fucking fantastic idea this is. And I'm not very good with them. some of my games went very close to time, and they did put me under a great deal of pressure. But I looked around the room and just thinking about the fact that every game in that room finished on time, and the TOs weren't spending 80% of their time trying to figure out who's won a game or not. Because at that point, when the clocks have run out, it becomes a battle of wills, and it's no longer a game of Sigmar. And it becomes the person that tends to win is the person that thinks they're more important than everyone else in that situation, which is really vile, isn't it? From a competitive viewpoint, I get the discourse around it. I get that some competitive people don't want to see clocks. I get some casual people don't want to see clocks, etc. And that's fine. I think as a competitive scene, we're not saying that every tournament ever needs to have clocks in it. I think from the domestic scene, you know, the UK scene, we're very opposed to it, and we just don't have the infrastructure that now supports creating an elite national team. And I think we've got to take some responsibility for that as well. I'll touch on that later if we revisit this. Hmm. But there is too much resistance to clocks domestically, and other nations don't have that resistance, and it shows. Like the French. I imagine going to a tournament in France, they're all quite happy to play with clocks, aren't they? I imagine it's the same in Denmark. Rune, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not
absolutely.
It's not got the resistance it has here, and it's our fault if we're not. The only experience that casuals really get with competitive gamers is when we argue about clocks once a year. So no wonder there's resistance.
The thing I would say as well is that we're going to get left behind in the UK. And I know that there's a vast majority of probably the majority of people that play Warhammer in the United Kingdom and probably globally don't give a fuck about that. Mm-hmm. Within, like, if we want to foster like a kind of, you know, a competitive scene, because there are like a lot of people who take this game as a competitive thing, and they get a, you know, it's a way of expressing themselves creatively and intellectually and all sorts. And like, we're going to get left behind if
we've been left behind.
arguably. I mean, Christ. Okay, case in point, I used a clock at Worlds 2022. The next time I used a clock was Worlds 2023.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's terrible. And I
think the next time I used the clock, that was the week after.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is a good point, Rune. I mean, not to throw you in the deep end, because there's some Twitter storm out there, but how do you feel about clocks? I mean, clocks, as you said, in Denmark, lots. Do you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I put myself into the Twitter storm a little bit myself, and I think I had a discussion with a guy from Denmark, another guy, and it was not specifically about clocks, but it was, I'm trying to solve a different issue about trying to get more people to attend tournaments in Denmark, because we're a super small country, right? And
I was
just asking him, because I think he has a better touch point than me for certain regions of Denmark, certain player bases. And I was talking to him about it, and he said to me that difficult games, and that was his wording, difficult games is a lot of reason why people do not attend tournaments. And difficult in the sense that it boils down to the fact that you want to go to tournament to play, not to resolve conflicts.
Yeah.
And it can be super exhausting to confront your opponent when there's an issue. In the UK, you got this super cool infrastructure with TOs, I imagine. I haven't been to a tournament in UK, but a lot of my mates have. And there are actual TOs at tournaments there. We don't really have TOs in tournaments in Denmark. We got the guy that arranges it. He is a TO, but he's not reffing.
Mm-hmm. Active TOs make a great deal of difference. And
yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, really, but really we don't have that, but instead we have clocks. And from the time perspective, that solves a lot of that. So he's all for clocks, having those at tournaments, because even for new players, it just, there's not a conflict on this time issue.
You're taking the timing. You're almost taking the timing out of the player's hands, even though they're controlling it.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
Exactly. You don't have to confront your opponent saying, "I think we're having an issue here."
It strengthens the social contract. It doesn't weaken it, does it? It makes it like a stronger bond between you and your opponent, because you're both on the same page and you're trying to get through these issues together, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that I got involved with one of the threads where someone wrote that they got offended if someone would bring a chess card and put it down in front of them.
Mm.
And for me, being personally offended by someone doing that is just strange, because I don't personally know you, so you shouldn't be personally offended by what I'm doing. I'm not. It's not because it's not an attack on your person, because I don't know you, so it cannot be an attack on your person. It's just that I want this to be a fair game.
Yeah.
From my own perspective.
I think a lot of people, lots of it is about lots of the threads, and people can go and read them. I think lots of people just from the other side feel that they want to approach the game slightly differently, and to them, a clock kind of pushes it towards a more competitive way. Whereas maybe they don't, they're not that interested in that sort of game experience at a tournament. So,
yeah.
Well, at the moment, if you want to use a clock in the UK, you've got to bring a clock and then ask your opponent. And there's a lot of people that are saying, "Oh, I would never play against a clock, etc." Because we don't have tournaments that say we're going to use chess clocks. Again, we don't have that infrastructure. We're not saying, I'm certainly not saying every single tournament we should use clocks religiously, and every single tournament needs to be hyper competitive, etc. But fucking hell, one or two would be nice, do you know? And I don't think if we have one or two in the UK, those people that don't like that want to play use clocks will turn up. Fine. Yeah. And all the fucking hundreds of other tournaments that don't have clocks, like Jesus Christ, it's not a big deal.
I suggest just trying it out, because
100%.
Also, for a lot of the people that are against it, I understand that perspective before, because I didn't feel similar, but I understand coming from that perspective when you haven't tried it. But from my point of view, it's not about managing my opponent's time, but I want to be able to calmly figure out my own turns without stressing myself. And I did that before there was chess clocks. I was like, oh, I need to figure out my hero phase real quick, because I'm spending our shared amount of time and we need to go to round five or we'll have an issue and I don't want to go to that issue. But now I can be like, okay, I'll spend 20 minutes thinking about my hero phase. That did bite me in the ass against France. That did bite me in the ass against France. But we'll get into that.
That's a very good segue, because we should probably come off the clocks now. But thank you all for talking about that, just because it's relevant. So, Worlds, Rune. You did a lot of talk about you guys' prep, and as we said, the year before, you guys were disappointed. So what changed between the year? I mean, fourth is still great, obviously, but what changed in between coming fourth and that sort of feeling of disappointment to this time round? What did you guys do anything different this time round? Was it more prep? Was it different prep? What did you guys kind of get up to in the intervening period?
I think we just, you know, put a bit of finesse on our approach. So not like any major changes, to be quite frank about it. Like, it's not like, oh, we saw Jesus or something like that. We just finessed it a little bit.
Well, that would have helped for a tournament.
It would have helped. Like, he was a handmaid.
Yeah.
We don't have the amount of time, a lot of us at least, that a lot of other competitors do in the scene. Like, we're not Big Phil, any of us.
Yeah. I mean, no one is Big Phil. Let's put that out there. I mean, no one in the world is Big Phil. So yeah, exactly.
So we really try to make it efficient, our practice. And all of our,
so was that like practice days, or was that team days? How did that sort of manifest?
I think in a sense we're blessed, because we, seven of us this year of the playing team and the coach and the two assistants were from the same club.
Okay, cool.
So that means we had a lot of just high level game, that sort of games always.
Yeah.
And I think I think a lot of other teams, you might have some games, you might only play tournaments, and you're going to conclude that your list is great because you went 5-0 or 4-1 at a tournament.
Sure.
But you don't really reflect on what if my opponent had done something else. You know, you just won it. And yeah. Because everybody in our little group is super competitive,
cool.
then we get a lot of the good games in. Yeah.
And you hear that a lot about, you know, people go through stretches of kind of winning lots and lots of tournaments. I know in the UK that happens, and often it's, you hear about this group of players that get to play each other all the time and they learn from each other. I mean, I know Darren, you guys in the My Hills are an example where you're just playing around with really good quality players, and lots of your practice games are just really good quality. So, so
you're
yeah,
only that's, as good that's, as the people you play. You're only as good as the people you play.
Yeah, play yeah, absolutely. And kind of the list and deciding what list to take and kind of your meta. We had a question from Twitter about was there anything that surprised you in the meta, or did you kind of nail the meta going in? How did you guys kind of come up with what you wanted to take? Was it a kind of very communal process, or were there strong characters there saying, I'm going to do this? How did you guys come around to it?
Yeah, extremely communal. Like, we are very flat hierarchy-wise, I guess you'd say. I'm elected captain, but I'm basically just, I think, was it Darren, you that said, had a word for it? Managing the chickens or something, you said.
I don't know, managing egos.
Yeah, managing chickens.
Management, yeah. That's what captaincy is.
I don't think for Team Denmark's perspective, it's not egos, but it's a lot of just managing and making sure everything works out. But it's not so much that we have a few of us making the big decisions. Of course, there are some of the guys that are newer that piggyback a little bit more, or like just tell me what to play sort of vibe. But it's very little of that. So I think that when it came to the lists, we had a good read on the meta, 100%. I'm not going to try and stroke my own ego, but I think that was, of course, a big part of why we won.
So did you go in with kind of thinking, were you a team that had kind of lots of counter picks to kind of what you thought the meta read would be, or?
Yeah, counter picks. Yeah, 100%. And then also not being too easy for other counter, like meta picks, not being a prey. Mm. So if you would take, from my perspective, if you would take a normal Helen Lumineth list.
Sure. Yeah.
There would be a lot of lists in the meta that was good to, that was designed to beat Lumineth because Lumineth was so dominant leading up to this.
Yeah.
So a lot of people brought Varangards or even Ogors or different lists that were good into to Lumineth.
So you mean the classic kind of Tekla Sentinel build.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So we wanted to avoid those kind of situations. Because that would make pairings a lot more difficult.
Mm. And did you do that actively for everyone's lists, or was that just a case of you wanted a few?
No, we did. We did for everyone's list, yeah. And we like to also try and strive a little bit away from the meta when we make our lists. Not in an attempt to purposely be harder to practice against. I mean, it's also a result because everybody knows how to play against a meta list because you've played against it 10 tournaments already. But that's not the reason that drives it. It's just that we think that we can make a better list.
It was very obvious the more, because I obviously did some of the coverage and watched some singles. And then, you know, I did actually watch all the games back and watched a couple of your rounds and obviously read all the lists. And it just seemed that you'd played, it's like with anything, you play and you play and you play and you realize what's good, and then you start to have a little bit of fun maybe with like 400 points of the army, and then you ended up with lots of things which, as you say, much like the French, like your Lumineth list and the French Lumineth list were very different, but they both were the slight step away from what you'd expect. So, you know, when you prepare as a team, you prepare for Lumineth, and all, and even people putting like matchups into the matrixes, they probably went, oh yeah, Lumineth, I'm KO, I've got my burst grenade, and you know, I can put my 30 thunders in front and blow everything up. Like, it kind of flipped those little things around. Even like, I don't want to get his name wrong. Is it Maltha? Maltha?
Melda, the Slanish player?
Yeah, I played him at Blood Tithe when he was playing Nurgle, and I was really impressed that he switched army. And then again, his Slanesh list was just, it had 10 Slickblade Seekers and then another 2 5s as well. And it was like, everything was like just that little bit sharpened and just that little bit honed more than a lot of the lists that were there.
We made that list together, Melda and I, and it's fucking slammed. I think lost. He averaged 18 points per game.
Oof. First person to ever beat Ronya at Worlds, I believe, as well.
And first time at Worlds, and quite new in the AOS scene in Denmark. He did get good matchups because he had a list that was able to slam dunk.
Yeah,
when he got into
Was that an active choice from your end? Was to try and get him into like the real nail aggro matchups? So he can go and get the points.
He had a lot of very green matchups every round. So Vaz was trying to dodge him not to get into the green-ish matchups.
Those are still very high-pressure situations because it's nice being in a comfortable matchup, but it's not nice to think, fuck, like, I'm expected to get a big, big win.
Yeah.
That does put you under a lot of pressure.
I prefer to be in red ones.
Me too.
It's interesting you say that because the episode, our little mini-sode before, which again, shout out, Luke and Darren did a great job predicting you guys were going to win. They both said they'd want their experienced players in the red matchups. So that sort of fits.
It's the red matchups are just when you're against an opponent that knows he's supposed to win this matchup, and you can just like, What are the name of the doctors that work like surgeons? You should surgically remove his own like trust in his own capabilities. You know, just see him and be very friendly and polite and make sure that everything's a good game, but just being able to surgically win that game.
That point where they realize they're going to lose.
Yeah.
that's great. Yeah.
and you know you can do it. Like, you just need to play right and hope that your opponent makes a mistake when it's very red. You've put a red color for a reason because you know if he plays it exact, you will lose. Otherwise, you predicted it wrongly, right?
We came up with the term on the Welsh team of like smashers and scrappers. So the smashers are like your 17, 18, 19, 20 points, and then your scrappers are getting 6, 7, 8, 9 points from reds. And definitely through the course of the tournament, I was on a smasher list and I realized in singles, I play off the back foot. So I like to play the left field lists, slightly left field. We had an agreement going in to Worlds that, you know, we were going to take really strong meta lists. So we were going to take the Gits, we were going to take the KO. And I put my hand up for KO. And probably in retrospect, looking back, that wasn't the best idea. I think I would actually be much prefer the psychological element that you describe, Rune, of being like, yeah, this is yours to lose, bro, and I'm going to push that button and I'm going to remind you of that at different points. And you know, like, I like that as a position that you start from, rather than the like, I've got to do my thing here. So I think allocating the right players onto the right armies is a skill, and obviously I think you sounds like you've got that right as well.
I think that we tried to pick the 8 list that we thought was best. So it wasn't like we thought we wanted to get off meta and be like, oh, the opponent's not going to know what we do. But that was just a happy coincidence as well.
So you didn't make kind of blockers or attacking type stuff. You just thought, okay, we want to get us a solid group of armies
best
as possible.
8 list we can get together. I think thinking back, we could have our one wrong choice of an army that was our Slave to Darkness list.
Oh, really? Why?
Because it wasn't good.
It's a bit predictable, right? It's a bit predictable.
This was good.
Why did you just turn into a Dalek? Really? Why?
I could have said I put my sound effects back on, but I didn't actually. That was just my superlative voice acting.
Can I actually ruin on army selection? Because from like the TTS times, I know that your player Casper Agdal is a fantastic Tzeentch player. And am I right in thinking you didn't take Tzeentch, right?
We did on Alexander.
Of course. Sorry, Alexander. Yeah, played the summoning list. Yes.
And both of those guys are OG Tzeentch players. Actually played the last two worlds as well.
Okay. And was it Casper that felt he could flex to something else then and it ended on Git?
Yeah. And he also did last year.
Wow.
Also flexed to Nurgle last year. And the reason for that is Casper is an amazing player. He invented the Archaean Tzeentch build on TTS. Ah, that was
he's the bugger.
Yeah, and
I remember those dark days. Yes,
yeah, he did amazingly. But he will agree with me when I say that Alex is the best Tzeentch player we have in Denmark.
Okay,
and just actually hands down the best player we have in Denmark. It's very good, Alexander. And this sort of army just feeds into how he plays. I don't think he's the army where he has the most joy.
Okay.
But he's just right up his alley.
It just fits. And you guys, because some of you guys went to team tournaments before Wells. Am I misremembering?
No, that's true. There was a group of guys that went to Bloodtithe as well.
Mm-hmm. And they did pretty well, didn't they? They did second and third or something.
Yeah, I think that's. I think something like that. We did one meta thing. We tried to be... I'm not sure it actually worked, but we had our Sylvaneth player. He brought either wings in his list. It was the exact same list at Worlds. He just had either wings at Bloodtithe. But at Worlds, he took him out to go under 80 points, which is what Gits want to be under. Usually they're about.
I noticed 80. Quite a lot of that. People trying to go as low as possible to try and get under the Gits. Yeah.
So he was our counter Gits, one of our counter list Gits lists, and a Bloodtithe. He didn't do that because he didn't want to sort of give Gits the impression that people would do that. The funny thing is, against England, he matched up against Gits.
I was amazed at how well that matchup goes, to be honest with you. Like, Durthu just wrecks face on that matchup, doesn't it?
Exactly.
It's so scary.
And your Gits player in England, he thought he had the triumph.
Yeah, he didn't.
Oh, interesting. I actually...
He's not used to having it.
So that's what Christopher said, at least, our Sylvaneth player, that mid-game, he was like, oh, I have the triumph, right? Like, you don't have the triumph, which is massive in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you started the tournament, you guys were up against Canada, weren't you, first round?
Canada round one, yeah.
So lovely. They listened to this one, and we listened to the party, the All Points, a shout-out to Dayton.
And Tristan and the rest.
Bud.
No, forget the rest of them.
No. Just,
no, none of those guys. None of them.
The other two are the real heart and soul of it.
Shout out to all of them. And they're a boot. I didn't necessarily want to go through every kind of round that you had, Room, but any kind of rounds that stood out for you, good or bad, you could say, whether it went against you and you thought it wouldn't, or you thought, oh, hang on a second, we've got this. Any of the rounds that really you were like, whoa, this is happening?
Well, the big round was obviously against the UK. That was day one already, the second game of the tournament.
Game against England, yeah.
Yeah, we were happy to meet them there.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I would have loved that it would have been England round one.
Oh, really? You would have preferred a big round one? Just go straight in there?
Yeah, straight in there. You know, beat them up, and then you get the fear factor of the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely.
If you want to win, you got to fucking beat him anyway.
Yeah.
So why not round one? Shake him up, and everybody else is going to be like, "Oh, these guys."
The second round did have those swingy battle plans, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Round had those swingy battle plans, yeah.
So that it's was, not necessarily as if it was round one, you would have it would have been like pure skill based. Obviously, there's skill involved in winning twists and turns and lurkers, but it can swing, so it would have
it
been
swing.
Yeah, a big a bigger flag. But hey,
I think going into beating them in round two was nice because I think we had a better prep or better read on how to pair into that round.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned it on my Twitter thread about the round, but that round, you know, we have this Excel sheet. Everybody got their Excel sheet.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Ours is pretty complex with a lot of different macros and stuff, but it works for us at least. And we put in a couple of times like how we would see the round going, and the last like take on the round for what England would do, I hadn't deleted that. So when I had made the copy and sat at the pairing table, did the pairings after the round, I was able to compare, okay, what did we think they would do to what they did? And it was just 1-1.
Really?
That was insane. That was really interesting. So
you really got their number big time.
We knew who'd be their defender, who they'd attack against our first defender, who they'd defend with, and attack on the second battle round, and then everything just made sense down the road.
Oof!
Yeah,
and then it just fit perfectly because no offense to any of the Team England players listening, but like you smashed them, didn't you? Pretty much. Yeah.
Almost captain. Good grief.
We got 113 points out of 120.
Wow. I mean, and as you say, that must have given the team huge boost. You just beaten the what were the reigning champions, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that gave the team everybody was a bit, we knew we could beat them, but one thing is thinking
actually
that
doing it. Actually doing it.
Story, right?
And this pre kind of thought about how rounds would go. Did that fit with the rest of the rounds? Were you quite? I mean, you must have been, right? Considering you beat everybody. But how kind of close were your kind of pre-round to your kind of post matchup? Did they all fit kind of 1-1, or were a few off, or anything like that?
I think James from UK, he played the Soulbite. That was my opponent, and he mentioned to me that, or he asked me, did you guys feel like you won the pairings? And I said, yeah, we did. And then he said, oh, well, everybody feels that after their pairings.
Mm. that's
and that is so true. Like, so I don't think, I didn't feel like we lost any pairings from 1-6. But I imagine like a lot of the opponents, they also thought, okay, we did good there.
Were there any ones where you thought it was a bit dicey, where you thought, oh, we probably won, but there's a few nasty ones in here? Like the French one? Here. How about the French round?
The French round, that was the most where we didn't, how do I say this? So we rate all the games from 0 to 20, how many points we're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And before the round, we also do it actually per battle plan. So on Presence of Idols, you might be able to take 12 points, but if you're playing Battle Lines Drawn, that might be 8. So we do that, and from the French team, that was actually the one where we got the closest to our preset average against them, you can say. So if you're looking at the pairings, that was the most, but we didn't win as much.
Yeah. Was that your closest round against the French?
I think so. I lost a game I should have won.
I was against the Gits, wasn't it?
That was against Gitz. I just played against USA, Gitz player. What's his name? That's embarrassing.
Oh, Noah.
Noah. Great game. He played a Boingrad Bounders, and then I played into Herders. And you got to approach those two games quite differently. There's some things that you got to watch out for. And I think because I just played that game and then I got put into a 20-0, talking back to I want red matchups, I just didn't focus enough. And I was honestly also quite exhausted. We had just played the UK and the USA, and then we met France. So it was like the big three.
You said you weren't focused enough, man, but I took that photo of you and Yorin together. And you're focused enough, man. There's like 2 minutes left in the round, and you're focusing there, bro.
Yeah, I got clocked that round.
Really?
I got clocked that round, yeah, because I just couldn't think as much as I wanted to. Yeah, but that doesn't make me not like clocks.
I think that's good, though, because it meant that you reached your limit. You've got something to improve upon now.
Yeah, for sure. Sure, and leading up to Worlds, my wife and I, we had another son.
Congrats.
Thanks. So I didn't have as many games in up to Worlds. I had a lot of theory.
Oh, the selfish bastards.
Yeah. Keeping me up all night. So I didn't have as many games in, but I had a lot of theory, and I think I felt like I knew the game better, but I wasn't able to play it better than last year. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's nice that you can fall back on that, though, because I think keeping your mind sharp, like playing games in your head, thinking things through, a lot of people don't do that enough. So it's a testament to you that you're able to still maintain a level of practice without actually practicing. It's so useful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And just before we go on to ask Owen about Wales, anything from your kind of run, Rune, that you thought, do you know what? We absolutely smashed that this year. That was awesome. And anything that you think, oh, actually, maybe we could do that better next time.
I think that we ended up having our Slaves to Darkness player being the first defender, I think, 4 or 5 out of 6 rounds. Because we didn't have a good first defender list. And
yeah.
Some people, they really try and get that. But so I think we might look into that concept a little bit more next year, having a good first defender list. Because instead, we just ended up throwing our worst list under the bus most of the time, round one.
Yeah.
And more,
I mean, God help everybody else if you are doing that next year and still beating everybody. Yeah. Anything you thought you did really well? Anything you thought, yeah, was great. The kind of predictions, the meta read, was that? I mean, it sounded like you smashed it on that.
Yeah, I think so. And it's something that, I mean, that other teams, they can't really just replicate. But I think, and it's going to sound corny as fuck, but I think what made us good was that we have this, we're really well tight-knitted group.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot and we're really honest about it. There's not this alpha male that plays this bad list that's just shuts down people's reactions to it. Like, oh, maybe you should tweak it a little bit. We don't have that sort of setting.
Yeah. You're able to have those conversations with each other to say, look, maybe this isn't working or maybe this is working, kind of come up with that.
Yeah. And we do it, the whole year. So we try and get each other better, even though we compete.
Yeah. And last question, I guess, for that is when do you start for next year? When do the Danes start? Have you started already?
Well, 2 days ago, I did it's a Danish tradition that you resign your captaincy.
Yeah.
So I did that 2 days ago. So now there isn't going to be an election process to find the new captain.
Oh. Well, there you go. On a high captain as a world champion is pretty great. So.
I'm pretty sure there's not going to be any applicants, but let's see.
I was thinking you're putting yourself forward, though.
Yeah, I think that it's a question. I think I can't help myself.
There you go, there's a miscast exclusive. Rune is maybe going to be the next Danish captain.
There's a saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So
that's right. I think a lot of people playing at this level up to a tournament like Worlds, they were like, it's going to be my last Worlds. Mm-hmm. And I said that loud.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure anymore.
It's so much fun, isn't it?
You want to defend it. You want to defend the title.
Why don't
you
just go grab another one?
Yeah. Exactly. Good to hear it. Owen.
Hello.
Wales.
Yes.
How was it? What was it like compared to last time? Because you were at the last one as well.
It was, I mean, from an event point of view, obviously we've been grilling Rune on like the minutiae or a bit more on the gaming side, but I'm sure he'd agree that from a sort of community side of things, it was pretty insane. Like the level of, I don't know, just camaraderie between all the teams, like that event, that award ceremony, like everybody wanted Denmark to win. Like it was like the sort of, you know, they beat everybody every round, and there was just so much camaraderie and good vibes.
Yeah, it's just like Eurovision. Ugh.
Well, I don't know anything about that, but like everything from like the people that won the painting to the people that won the sports, and it was just a real celebration at the end. And like that side of things, everybody coming together was pretty amazing. It made me think of like when you see the Olympics and stuff, and they're all in the Olympic Village together, and all the athletes mingle, and they're all partying and all competing, but all partying and stuff together and celebrating this hobby, this crazy little corner of this hobby. So, yeah, I mean, Rune, I don't know if you want to touch on that. I know that we've moved on, but...
I agree so much. It's definitely the best tournament I've ever been at. That's not just because we won. It would also sit the same.
Yeah.
If you'd asked me halfway through. There was just... And so a lot of clean games. A lot of camaraderie around the games. And I think it was a perfect hit on like seriousness in the evenings and between the games, but also being able to like talk and
share,
have fun together, share.
It's a bit like that macro version of what you were talking about with your teammates, where you're like everyone's chatting and sharing in the club. It was like that on an international level. And
And shout out to Tom, I mean, and Jeremy, and all the other guys that
Martin arranged it. And Danny, amazing.
Alex, listen to this. Are you dead jealous
of Worlds?
Yeah, of not being there. Sounds great, doesn't it?
No.
Oh, fuck you, funny man.
No, I think the whole community is coming together and playing. These tournaments and playing these games is always sounds fantastic. The whole kind of playing with people from other countries. Because I'd love to go and play against people from Denmark or wherever, Sweden, US. That'd be awesome. I love that. Me personally, I'm not a fan of nations playing against each other. I'm not a very national sort of person. So that's probably why Worlds wouldn't be for me. But the thought of
me neither, playing, Alex. I think that's. That's the only quirk I got, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
National teams, like, oh, come on.
I'm not a big
national like fan personally. So from that side of things, that doesn't really interest me. But playing against people from other countries is, great. That'd be perfect. That'd be brilliant. It's why maybe that I thought the singles at Worlds would be quite a nice one to do.
Yeah, because you really will soak up the vibe then. I definitely think that anybody that goes, you know, qualifies on the team, it's like a privilege to play at that tournament. Definitely. Mm. Like I do consider myself to be very lucky. Mm. But there's nothing to say that you can't replicate that vibe. Like I know I'm not here to plug the Alliance Open, but they put on team tournaments in that same venue where I've been there and commentated and done other bits and bobs there, and you have a similar feel. And, you know, Blood Tithe run by Mark in the UK. And I think I read this weekend, I think pretty sure that the first ever team tournament in Australia, or one of outside of Remax, there's a big team tournament in Australia this weekend. And I think the format's growing. So the opportunity for people to.
I was just going to say that, Owen.
Yeah.
Team formats, for me, that's how Warhammer is supposed to be played competitively.
Mm.
I think we've said it before on the podcast. I think everyone seems to really enjoy team tournaments. That's that camaraderie, isn't it? So
say, for example, when I first got back into this hobby, you're like, I would buy some models and I'd be super hyped to then go down the club and like play with my new unit of Blood Reavers or whatever, you know. So you'd want to share like your hobby with your immediate friends, and it's kind of like taking that and like pumping it full of steroids. You're basically like going with all of your friends and you've all planned this amazing trip, and you've planned your armies, and you all know what each other are doing, and you're all backing each other up, and it makes, you know, such strong bonds between groups and stuff. And then you then go and meet other groups, and I think it's just a very clear demonstration of that sort of natural human thing that we all want to go and collaborate and learn from each other. And I'm getting a little bit philosophical here, but it's like Warhammer's the conduit. Warhammer's just the tool. Like, fundamentally, we're just, you know, going and having a good time and meeting people from around the world. And
I think it's for all levels of players, because even if you're, when you're playing a teams tournament and you're in a matchup that's bad for you, you know, it's because that's what the pairing made the most sense to give other of your teammates some benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having a much better time in that situation than if you were playing at a singles tournament, you know, as a not top competitive player.
And you've got something to strive for. Like, you get 2 points, and that could be the difference between your team winning. And that's brilliant, isn't it? You've just been smashed in the game, but you fucking got those 2 points. you got through to the next round, so you can all celebrate something, can't you?
Absolutely.
I would say, like, talking a bit about Wales and the experience, then one of the things that comes from that discussion is, so Jay is a young lad. He helped at the Six Nations, and he came in. He would admit, like, we really did struggle to put a team together for a variety of reasons. And he came in late, and he got on an army late, and he played Cruel Boys, which people were mocking a little bit. And like,
how did he do?
Mate, he did great. I would like to dig out the points, but he did fantastic. And the thing that he did, and we did a feedback process now. We've had our process of, we've picked a new captain and a new management structure. And part of that whole thing was quite a detailed feedback on Worlds. And nearly everybody, one of the questions was, what was your favorite moment of the tournament from a gaming perspective? And nearly everybody said, when Jay beat the German captain with KO with the footballers. Like 16-4, and like the joy that we got, like, collectively from, like, our guy, like, putting that army on the table and really, you know, getting that really strong win. Because it's, this was shout out to I believe it's Max.
Yeah.
My brain is faltering. I know Max, I've met him many times, he's a lovely man, but he's one of the hosts of the Aethercast KO podcast. He's gonna hate that I brought this up. I'm sorry, Max, but it's obviously tough because Grinning Blades, you can't target outside of 12, so when the KO player commits, they really have to do the work each time, and it's like it's basically a super trade. You know, Max would constantly be having to, like, trade out a unit for effectively a screen to try and get close to the meat each time. But everything from the terrain to the mission and the way that we prepped Jay and the way that he delivered, like that, I took more satisfaction from that than any of my own games. And I think that goes to that whole team tournament thing of, you know, scrapping for 2 points, or, you know, people understanding what constitute a win in teams is a really wide scale, isn't it? It could be everything from 1 point to 20 points, but it's all contextual. I think that element of sharing in those successes and stuff is, like, what's really great about teams.
And anything for Wales that, again, I guess the same question I asked Rune, anything that you guys, that you can remember, you thought, oh, we did really well on this, and anything you thought maybe we could do better for next time?
Okay, well, I mean, I'll address it that we went seventh in 2022 with probably what I would say would be the strongest team that we've ever put out. Like, I've been involved with Wales for about 5 years now, and that was a very strong team. We only lost to the podium. We lost to England, France, and Sweden. We played a lot of really good teams. This year we finished 10th. I think we only had about 10 points less than our previous, but we very much operated in the mid pack. You know, we played Switzerland, all great teams, by the way, Switzerland, Belgium, Germany, Germany, Greece, Spain, and the Netherlands. So they would be the sort of teams that were all scrapping for, you know, maybe places from sort of fourth through to 12th or 14th or something. Mm-hmm. We went in, we know that we've got strong players, and Simon, our captain, he obviously works with you, Darren. He's one of the coaches. He's a fantastic amazing player, an amazing brain for the game, and he brought us on so much. But for various reasons, we didn't have a stronger squad this year as we did last year. The cost and, you know, people dropping in and out of the game, things like that. So we, you know, I don't think it's a particular secret in the, you know, gaming world that we, you know, we didn't go in with the greatest expectations. We wanted to perform. We have good players. So I actually was, whilst I wouldn't be content or happy with 10th, you know, I think given the circumstances, we did pretty well. And we put Math Mallow and Simon together as the pairing partners, pretty much, you know, at the event. We were like, we should really do this. And that worked out amazing. And I will only say it because I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it came back in a lot of the feedback. I did a lot of work for prepping, but we had systems in place for prepping players in that, what I call like the golden 10 minutes between the pairings being made and then people going to their tables. Oh, nice. So we had these laminated terrain mats for every matchup, plus all the lists. And you could basically pair the player off with them with the terrain setup, plus their list. And they could then go
super
off.
Super important stuff.
Yeah. With another player and like get the micro details. So for example, players that weren't involved in the pairings, like Matthew Goldsborough and myself and Mark and some of the more senior players, Rick Myhill, they would then fill in any little bits of detail or just reinforce some key things with the players in that little bit of time. So that little bit of micro prep had a lot of impact on the way that we got points during the round. So there were some things we did really well. And, you know, Simon got 117 out of 120 points on Gear.
Beautiful.
How many reds did he give himself?
Good question. Hold on. He played a lot of mirrors. He 20-0'd in a lot of mirrors, to be fair, which is...
I'm kidding.
I really liked Math Mallow's list.
Man, he wrecked face. I think he was predicted to get 59 points from his matchups. Got 96, I want to say.
He's built different, though.
He was doing some crazy stuff. Yeah, that's the perfect synergy of, you know, a player with a list. Like, you know, he is very proficient with a lot of armies. But yeah, when push came to shove, it was like, let's put him. So, you know, the strategy for us was Simon was on Gitz, you know, your sort of Grimcrack, 72 Squig Herd, you know, just uber fight when you die, recursion, smashy list. Math was on his Sylvaneth. Matt G was on the classic Helon build, and then I was on the KO. And those were the four lists that we were looking to pair as strongly as we could. But everyone got, and then we had Rick was on Slaanesh. Rick did fantastic with Slaanesh. And then we had Mark with the Skaven, which was a very coin flippy kind of build. That one, you know, if it got the double, it would wreck, but quite tricky to play. And then Rick with his Cruel Boys and Stuart with the Zinch list, which I think we'd admit that Zinch list was we didn't quite get that right. So, you know, there were some things like there's loads we can improve upon. But I think fundamentally we did well given the circumstances. And on a personal level, you know, speaking plainly, you know me, I'm a bit of a plain speaker. Like I wasn't in a very good mental space going into the tournament. I think if we were to talk about, God, I'm just monologuing here, so apologies. But if we were to talk about things to learn, then definitely the much like what Rune said, and speaking to Leo from the Finnish team and some other players, like 20 high quality practice games or even 10. With really good players that will pull you apart and you'll step back and re-rack, that is much more beneficial than going on some mad dash around the UK playing in loads of singles tournaments, which is what I did. So I think targeted practice, a much more analytical approach from a team base would help us. Plus, I think I would say all teams would agree on this, like, you know, you're a group of friends at the end of the day. So doing more things that encourage team building, I think, is important. Even some non-Warhammer stuff.
Yeah.
So
if Alexander is He's one of the big voices on the Danish team. I mentioned that he's probably the best player we got in Denmark, or he is the best player around Denmark. He stresses that every time as well. Like he arranges events for the team where we just go and we play a Mario Kart sort of game with Warhammer models, and we drink and we grill food together and don't play touch Warhammer for the whole day or something like that. Because that's so important.
Warhammer models then, sorry.
Sorry?
I got a great image when you said Warhammer models then, but I was thinking...
yeah, Warhammer models, but we're playing Mario Kart. It's
that's like, you know, there's a tournament in the UK called Bobo, and Adam Kunis does Griffhound Racing, I remember. Yeah. With like in the bar, we would do Griffhound Racing games. So
yeah, that's the stuff.
Yeah,
it's all about that team camaraderie again, right? Making sure that you're all totally gelling and being able to have those honest conversations with each other if you need to. Yeah,
yeah, I think an organization, a really strong organization, whether it be like business or friends or whatever, if you've got people that can just put their hand up and be like, "No, you're wrong. I'm not being rude, but you're wrong," and like it's democratic and everyone's got a voice, I think that's really important. So what I would say is you should look out for Wales in 2024. We've got a thing already roaring to 24 because we're dragging. So that's
the Danes and the Welsh coming for everyone as well.
Well, I mean, we're going to go and we're going to have a really good time. It's a nice balance between maybe the American model and the Danish model, because the Americans, like, they were having a great time and looking to perform as well. I think you'd agree, Rune, that you had a more focused approach. I mean, you made up for it on the Sunday night with tried harder than anybody, but I think during the tournament, probably quite a professional approach, would you say?
Yeah, we didn't have many beers during the tournament.
No.
Only the single days we did.
Yeah. But
not during the gaming days, I think.
So I would like to take the opportunity to just shout out to our new captain. And we have a committee-based approach, so everyone has a voice. But
it'd be exciting.
Yeah, Dan Arnold is the
captain.
All right.
And then myself, I'm the vice captain, and I'm sort of more logistics. And then Math Mallow is the head coach, and he's running all of the games and the strategy with the help of all the other players and everything. But that's the new Welsh team structure. So,
exciting times. Right, yeah. Darren.
Yes,
England.
Mm.
We were talking a bit. We've talked about this before, haven't we? So last, if anyone wants to, go back to our first ever episode, which is a year ago, all that time ago.
Yeah.
Episode one. And I think your words were, "They're coming," I think, was, yeah. I mean, that happens in multiple episodes. But especially in that first episode, you said, "The rest of Europe are coming." And, yeah, it looks like it happened.
Yeah, I said a few things. I went back to listen to that because I remember making a few predictions and giving a few warnings. And I hate, as much as I love being right, I fucking hate it in this context. But I basically said that reiterate an earlier point, we don't have the infrastructure in the UK to support like an elite competitive domestic team. When we needed to reach out to the community more. And I think by not going on stream last year, it meant that we didn't get to show the community what goes on at Worlds, and you don't get that buy-in from the community. You don't get that. And whether or not you like the people that are organizing the stream or not, it's fucking bigger than you. Like, That you know, it frustrates me that there are these tensions, What am I trying to say? I think we need to make more. There should be more engagement with the community at large, and we'll have less problems. There'll be less resistance to things like chess clocks. It won't be this big casual versus competitive debate because they'll see we're real fucking people. So I'd like to see a bit more sort of engagement with the wider community, not just the competitive community, but the wider community, perhaps.
How is it in the UK? Sorry for interrupting you. How is it in the, because I'm interested in that. Like, I'm sure other people don't really know the tournament scene in the UK. Do you have tournaments all the time?
There are tournaments all the time.
Yes, and I'm all of them.
I was about to say, Owen's at literally every single one of them.
So for complex rune, I was going to chill out, but after this weekend, where I'm going to build and paint the army, I've got three tournaments in a row over the next 3 weekends, ranging from 16 person through to like 80, 90 people, I think Feud is, and it's all new handbook as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, if you wanted to in the UK, you could go every weekend.
All right. Do you have pretty big tournaments where there are no players at like the world's level sort of players, or are there that sort of players at every tournament?
I think I would probably, there's going to be some. The thing I do sometimes is I go on BCP and I'm like, oh, there's a tournament here, and like don't recognize any of the players. So I'm sure there's lots of tournaments going on in the kind of 12 people through to 24 or 30, where you might not have any recognizable names, but like, yeah, every tournament in the UK that's like 24 to 32 players plus will have a couple of people that would get on an international team, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, agreed. But it means that there's only one or two, you know, sort of
competitors for the first place.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in skill level. I'm not saying that there's only one or two difficult games, but there's only one or two opportunities to practice a world-class game, and that is not conducive to creating really good players.
No, because I think I've never won a tournament in Denmark. And I just won the world championship. So for me, that was easier. Wow. No, that was just a bit of a hit in the back. But what I mean by that is that we have like the whole world's team plus people that are competing for the spot that are really good at all the big tournaments in Denmark.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got an infrastructure that supports that, haven't you? Yeah, that's some really quality practice. It's one thing to play people, you know, in practice. It's another one to actually go to competition where you can't stop and sort of discuss things and rewrap or anything like that. The pressure is on, and we could. I think there's a lot we could do to improve not just the English infrastructure. I would love to see a lot more collaboration between the sort of home nations, with Wales, with Scotland, with Ireland, with Northern Ireland, etc. Because you're only as good as the people you play. And I mentioned this last year, and I felt like I got a little shot down before. The general consensus was, well, we don't want them to get better and beat us at Six Nations. And I think that is absolute folly. The fear of losing stops you. That's really terrible. Wow, I feel we've got to get rid of the fear of losing for a start. Like, we've lost now as well, you know. That can happen, and it did happen. So I think we need to raise up the people around us, or be raised by the people around us as well. This notion that we're the best players in the world has been decimated. Or maybe not decimated, that's a bit dramatic, but it's certainly been rocked, hasn't it? So I would like
it's to been detonated.
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 So I think I'd like to see a little bit more infrastructure to support creating elite players. I'd like to see more collaboration. I'd also like to see Rune, in Denmark, do you ever go to tournaments where you're allowed to use pre-nerfed tomes that haven't had an FAQ, or do you always do you wait until they've been FAQ'd and then let them played, or can you just use them as soon as they're out?
We used to do that, but then GV started to not make FAQs 2 weeks after book release.
Yeah, okay.
And when they did that, we said, okay, we're just going to play with the tome.
Yeah.
And if there's something blatantly broken, like if we were to play if we had a tournament next weekend, we'd also house rule some of the GHB stuff on the battle plans.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Like, there's one that's obvious where you can take off your opponent's models.
D3
opponent models. Take them off the board and just never deploy them. Of course you can. So if there's a similar thing in a book, we would house rule that, but we play with new tomes.
I think that's a sensible approach, and I'd like to see a little bit more of that, because the whole time we're going to tournaments and we've got pre-FAQ'd tomes available, people are then taking those, and they do tend to do better than post-FAQ'd tomes. Hmm. Then if people are using those as results and justifications to sort of get onto a national team, when they end up at Worlds, they're playing against players that have practiced against your list multiple times, that aren't surprised by anything that you've got, you know, and they've got all that time to prepare. So that's not an environment, personally, like having pre-FAQ tomes available at tournaments. I'm not saying for all tournaments, I'm saying for some. I would like to see some tournaments that are designed to create good players, you know, and to make the England selectors make their job much easier. I would also like to see a delay in the England team being chosen, so that it means, because you get the danger of you get chosen and then you rest on your laurels and you don't practice.
So when do you guys choose your team?
I don't know exacts, but it's quite early on. I'd like to see it a bit later so that people are fighting for a spot. They're playing fucking games. Like, you have to be playing games. I won't go into too much, but there wasn't as much game playing as perhaps there should have been.
Wouldn't you announce your Six Nations team, like, and your Worlds team pretty much at the same time?
Yeah. And so I think
November. So like 6 months in advance or 5 months in advance.
It's a lot of time, isn't it? And I think that has the opposite effect of what you'd hope it would have. So I'd like to see, you know, more competition, people fighting for their place, going to tournaments, proving that they're good, using tomes that have got post FAQ, like getting a podium, showing people that you've got a 5-0, I think is less important than showing people that you're a good fucking player, and you need to get to Worlds fully prepped all year, playing opposition that are prepared for you. You know, that's how you breed better players. That's a personal thought anyway. And I think if we did all of that or we moved to, I'm going to say this and then, you know, next week all the tournaments are going to be using chess clocks and we're all going to be you know, all competing. But I think we need to lay the groundwork. I would like to see some more people reaching out to the content creators. There's so much that can be done, you know, meet the players, you know, go through their journeys, all of that jazz, get a connection with the community, get people invested and create an infrastructure that supports creating really good national teams. The danger is if we adopt the Denmark approach. And I think that's because you guys have got a smaller community than us, Rune. So this is not me casting dispersions at you.
Do you have sort of an academy in the UK?
Not one that's specific for, I think that's true actually, because we've got the Six Nations. So we bring people in and they cut their teeth at Six Nations and then they'll progress onto Worlds. So yeah, there is, an academy in the sense that you mean it, I believe. But yeah, that could be organized a bit better as
that
well.
That's quite new for us. And I think that was one of the biggest, the best things when it comes to connecting with the very competitive players in the community that are not on the national team. Mm,
okay.
So we have a Discord and we have this community with academy players, and we, throughout the years, Worlds players, they try to coach them. And then leading up to Worlds, 4 months before or something like that, it reverses. So these players that have been coached, they now have to be, they're now designated practice opponents. You got to figure out how the best crew boys list is, and you got to play it against me. But before I played against you, you have to have 10 practice games against someone else.
Yeah.
Leveling up your abilities. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been good, like, connecting with competitive players in Denmark, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, you're only, I'd say it till I'm blue in the face, you're only good as the people you play. So fucking make sure everyone you play is really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to be a bit relative, though, the England guys did come third, so you know.
Yes, it's not a disaster at all. It's fantastic.
It's podium. Yeah. Absolutely.
They did really rally. I remember talking to quite a few of them in the bar of that evening after they'd lost, and they were pretty gutted. But then that then turned into some really targeted focus.
I have mad respect for the bounce back.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think coming third is still excellent, and I know a lot of the guys were pretty disappointed because winning the year before, but bouncing back from the Danish round and still coming third is, you know, I mean, third's a great result. So, but I do understand that. I know some of them were disappointed from not winning. So
yeah, please don't take my rant as me thinking that they didn't do as proud, because they absolutely did. There's always things you can improve upon, and those are the areas that I would.
And you're not commenting so much on the. You're not commenting at all on the players, right? You're commenting on
the culture.
Before. I think
I really like your idea about the kind of all the nations kind of coming together.
What's going
to
happen? Don't worry.
I think that's going to be amazing as a, you know, because this is high quality teams so close to each other. That'd be perfect. Any last comments about Worlds, Rune or Owen? I'll start with you, Rune. Any last kind of, as we're moving on with the time, any last comments you want to say about your experience?
I can make a funny anecdote.
Yeah, please.
I guess.
We love funny anecdotes. That's what Owen's here for.
Now the pressure's on for it to be funny. But so I came to Amsterdam a bit later than everybody else on the team. Came in 2 days later, or a day and a half, and the guys on my team, they told me that six teams had approached Denmark and be like, what the fuck is Rune doing with this list? What is that list supposed to do? And then we agreed that I wouldn't play that list in the hole, because everybody was practice gaming there. So we borrowed a mat from Alliance Open, and we went to the hotel room and we played on the floor. Some glorious pictures of me bending over the floor.
he's a celebrity now. You can't talk about him like that.
Is it Wednesday?
Please continue, Rune.
We were using terrain like... Maybe your first AOS game was similar, because you didn't have proper terrain pieces. You were losing, like, there was a toothbrush and there was a shampoo bottle and there was a pillow in the corner, and that sort of game.
Old school Warhammer, that is, yeah.
Yeah. So we were a bit secretive on that one. But, yeah.
Good.
I like the playing on the floor. That's going back to childhood days. You know,
exactly.
The shampoo bottles and everything.
It did hurt my back a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Oh, you're just a young nipper, Rune. Just a young nipper.
Yeah.
Owen, any last thoughts about Worlds?
It was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great one, to be fair.
I mean, yeah. Like, we've gone really deep on, like, you know, the what ifs and, like, trying to figure out, you know, what we can attribute the success of Denmark, you know, to, and et cetera. But I think really we do spend a lot of money and we invest a lot of time into this thing, and it is supposed to be a hobby, but yeah, I had a really fun time. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Seb and the Narnia crew. He'll know what I mean. Just swapping shirts and having hugs and all that stuff. I'm a soppy git, really. I do. It's more just, you know, widening your pool of friends and stuff. So, yeah, had a lovely time. And like Runa says, I came back and was a bit like, oh, maybe that's the last one. But now I'm on the plane already, baby. Let's go.
Now you're back on it. Yeah. So there you go. There's another advert for Worlds. You might get to see Owen and his sexy socks if you get to go next time. So
I got given two pairs of socks, actually. And I was so Tom.
I didn't know that was a thing. I'll bring a pair next time.
Oh, thanks. One of them I wore, and one of them I really need to choose when I wear them, because one of them had they were from Tom, and they were the TO, and they were a picture of him, his face, and Jeffrey, the captain of the Dutch team. They kind of had these sort of like shocked, you know, like those the pictures that people have on those Warhammer videos when they're like, oh my god, you'll never you know, whatever, you know, it's just like the new Tyranids are busted, and there's like some shocked face.
Yeah.
I've got little shocked faces all over my that's one pair. And like Tom was really disappointed because I didn't wear them the first day after
he them.
Team socks as well. Yeah.
I wore them on day one, and then somebody gave me a pair, and I can't remember who it was. So please reach out to me if it was you, because I've got a black pair of socks with like your traditional white lines around them, and then they've just got the word "daddy" printed on them. They're really fucking inappropriate.
Was it Darren? Did Darren turn up to Wales and slip them in there? Yeah.
I don't know, but shall I take a photo of them?
Tweet them.
Yes. Okay, yeah, please.
I'll take
we'll tweet them out.
The daddy Owen.
Daddy OJ, yeah.
Yeah,
Daddy OJ. great. Well, thank you, Owen. That was a wonderful last one to do. Right. We're going to do our last section. We always do. So for Owen and Rune are going to give us some lovely... well, Darren, take it away.
The misplays!
I mean, I think that was louder than my... louder than my AOS World Champion shouting. So there you go. I did warn you, Rune. We do a lot of shouting on this. Right, the misplays section. So hopefully Rune and Owen have got some... I nearly called you Rowan there, or Owen. It's a combination of your two names.
He ruined the opposition, didn't he?
So Owen won't be on any more podcasts from going forward. So, so we've got some misplays. So, Rue, do you want to kick us off with a play or a misplay that you thought was memorable from Worlds?
Yeah, I can start with a tiny misplay that's just huge, and I think it's. It's not like I forgot my shooting face or something like that. I've done that before.
Mm-hmm. I love those ones. They're my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, I played. That was a game of Hello Heart where I had 50 models I could shoot. I just forgot that face. It was not that big. It was against Jorin in France.
Mm-hmm.
Good player. I think he's actually German. Excellent player. Plays very tight. I loved the game when it came to like. The skillfulness in it. But my first hero phase, I moved up my Cathala up behind 8 inches behind my front line. And that was a huge misplay, that it was 9.1. Because what he could do was that he could then move up his herders up to my front line, and then half the unit died, so the other half, they ran.
Mm. Oh, they get blown up.
And he could target my Cathala, who then died.
Oh,
who was supposed to come back on a 3+, but she didn't. Oh. But I don't blame that dice roll. I blame my stupidity of moving it there. And I just played against point guard bounders, which we can't do that, obviously. So it wasn't an issue. So I didn't really think about the movement for the Cathala for their game, but that was so critical because you need her to be able to control the unit herders.
Yeah.
So when that unit herders came back, I couldn't control it. Yeah. And that unit herders alone could just kill whatever they got in touch with. So that's why it was super intense, because it was the first movement phase where I messed up. So I ended up clocking my time, as I told you guys, because I had to really try and get as many points from that game as possible. And I was actually drawing it, like it would have been a draw, but then I ran out of time and you could score for the last round.
Oh, what a brutal way to get punished for that, such a small thing as well.
Yeah, but I think it really shows that it's a game of inches rather than a game of like the turn roll, you know? It's so important for that.
100%, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Right. Owen, any misplays from you?
I want a play from Rune. Have you got a play?
We could get a play from Rune as well. You got a play, Rune?
Come on, polish your ego. Give yourself a pat on the back, bro. I'm sure there was some gold in there.
Alfarion's biggest kill.
Oh, that must have been, what's he called, Achaean?
Oh, nailed it.
That's a big kill. Yeah, he killed Achaean. Achaean dealt 2 damage to Light of Otharion, and Light of Otharion killed Achaean. He is bonkers, guys. Nobody plays him. Luke just started picking up from the UK.
Oh, don't big up Luke now, because he'll.
Well, I'm going to big up Darren, because when I was playing Reign of Stars, and I was like, I'm thinking of dropping the Slan. This was like 9 months ago or something. Dazza, you were like, get Light of Otharion in there.
Yeah, yeah. I use him in cities.
But, he is great.
Only one person was brave enough to bring him to Worlds, though, wasn't it?
He was the only one of them.
He stabbed. He also killed 12 Bulgors against Belgium.
Wow.
It's just nuts. Yeah. Best play, I think it was against James. That was just, I think, understanding the game. So it's not actually like a play in itself, but he played 200 zombies and I had 29 models. And we played hero holding, what is called Only the Worthy, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he had, I don't know, 4 or 5, Legion champions, and I had one. But I could take turn one, and due to how the terrain layout was, I knew that he would put most of his zombies on one side of the map, because there was a lot of terrain on the other side of the map, and that's not fun for his pylons. So I just put the Cathala on the point, just with the tippy toe. And James was like, oh, now you're going to screen for her. And I knew that I didn't want to screen. I'm not sure if he baited me or if he thought it was best to screen to this day. So, James, you could PM me. But if I had screened, then I would have allowed for zombies to be able to run up and pile into the screen. Just sacrifice that. But by being there, I was like 15 and a half inches away from his zombies, so he could only get a few in. And I knew that the Cathala wouldn't die from that.
Yeah.
So I just let my Cathala get in combat with zombies, and he took the bait and got in there, and nothing good turned out from that. And I ended up winning that game over James. Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go. So James, if you want to, just PM Rune, and then we can all hear about it.
From Rune's lovely opponent. Comment. Lovely game, though.
He's a sweet guy, James. Owen?
I've got a couple of misplays and a couple of plays, but I can probably do a misplay that led into a play all wrapped up in one.
Sounds lovely.
So this was, and I'll cap it off with a little tip for all KO players, which I'm sure the community will love for me to tell them, because there's a bit of sweet tech that I don't see many people using. But the misplay into a play was basically, I mistakenly thought that I was really good on Battle Lines Draw, and I played it twice, and I did win both the games. I won against Gitz in round one, and I beat this was a game against the Greeks. But essentially, with Battle Lines Drawn, it's a really hard, and I'm 10 drops, it's really hard to get a turn one battle tactic, because you can't do Cunning Maneuver, because this is the mission where it's table quarters. So you can't do Cunning Maneuver because there isn't an objective wholly outside. And you can't do Stake a Claim, which is the cheeky one that KO and Fire Slayers players like to do, whereby they start by not controlling any objectives. You've seen with the KO players, they just stay off the objective. And when your opponent deploys onto their objective, then they start the turn and they have less. And then if they just jump on theirs, step onto another one, you have more, and that's your 2 points. Easy. So you can't do either of those passive ones. All the get in and out of both ones you can't do. So you either have
a killer unit, yeah.
Yeah, which means generally I have to put something important, either 15 Thunderers or my boat with 15 Thunderers at 18 inches. So essentially I played Marathi and the Bow Snakes. He deployed pretty well. He put a screen of 10 witches on one side, and then he actually screened with little Marathi and big Marathi. So I was like, shit, what I'll have to do is just hug the edge of the board, stay at 18 with my ironclad, and then I'm confident that with the distances and everything, even if he doubles me, he's going to have a long charge to get into me. And I'm confident that I can, you know, I've left a little bit of space behind me. So if the cloud gets blown up, then I'm not going to lose all my Thunderers. But it was still a bit like, shit, this is a massive green for me and I've already fucked up. So, yeah, I did push for opening salvo, easily cleared out the 10 witches. And then it was a good play. I basically got the Navigator to put half move and D3 mortal wounds onto both of the Marathis. So I knew then that they were going to be slowed down, which was going to help me in not getting my boat caught. So I was like, okay, sweet. I'm in an okay spot. So his turn, I know this is a long misplay, but it's like a big culmination of events. So he then, I'd forgotten about the Mirror Dance spell. So even though he was half moved, he mirror danced the two units. And then that meant that he got closer. And then he doubled me. And I was like, shit, this is actually danger now. I'm going to lose my boat. So he took the battle tactic that was charge three units, and he's brought down some harpies, and he had little Marathi and big Marathi. And I had an admiral, which was chargeable, and also my boat. And this was a massive misplay. I was about to lose, and I was furious with myself. And then at the start of the movement phase, I basically realized, I declared, I was like, I'm going to use my code right in the hero phase to change. So, no, sorry, that's a different tip. So what I did was, I basically was like, fuck. The thing I can do, normally you use the KO ability to do two commands in the same phase to fly high and then combat landing, so to deliver your payload. But I was like, shit, the only thing this is going to get me out of this is if I use the command in the same phase to double redeploy, because you can do that in the world's pack, because you can use leadership of the alpha to basically give your boat the two commands. So he had to move one of his Marathis closer to be able to get one of his three charges off. So, yeah, he just got within nine of my boat, which meant that I spent two command points and I double redeployed the boat 8 inches, and he failed the charge and had to go into my admiral instead. Saved the boat, and that then meant that I could then fly high the next turn and basically table him and get a 19-1.
Doesn't sound like a misplay. That sounds like a great play.
So it was a massive misplay to put myself in a position, and then it turned into a great play. So, yeah, that's why I misplay into good play. But I was pleased with scrambling, and I appreciate that that's what I'm good at. I'm good at creative scrambling. I shouldn't have put myself in the position. But, yeah, being able to do an 8-inch redeploy, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to do an 8-inch redeploy again, because I think that the pack should be changed, because it's only at Worlds that you can do that. And then, yeah, my last little tip would be, this came up and it helped me beat the Belgian captain Thibaut with the 60 Sentinels, because that was a horrible matchup for me. And the code right, not many people use the code right. So this is my other good play and a good tip for people, is talking about that big commit where you've used the ability to use two commands in the same phase, you've dumped everything down. In the shooting matchups, what you can do with the code right is you can change from being, you can change your footnote. So once you've used your big commit, you've dropped your Thunderers down, you've blown a load of stuff up into like Sentinels, for example, like against Thibaut, I basically use the code right ability to change it so that now I have once per battle, when I'm shot at by a unit, I can shoot back at the end of my opponent's shooting phase. So in the shooting matchups, like, he basically was not motivated to shoot my Thunderers, because when you shoot back, you don't have to shoot the unit that shot you. So I could clear out something really important if he targeted my Thunderers. So basically in that match, I think I lost my Arcanauts and maybe one or two heroes on turn five, but my Thunderers were basically full because of that one little ability. So that was my little play. And I told Leo about that on the finish team.
That's a nice play. Yeah.
Yeah, he used that a few times because it just shuts down your opponent. Like, his Sentinels were just not doing anything because he was worried about, you know, poking his head forward with the wrong unit and then losing it because of that one ability. So there's a few little bits of KO. Also, I think KO are not two turn, put it down in your opponent lab. Quite a techie, complicated army if you play it interesting.
But, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Shut up, Alex. Anyway, there's me monologuing again, but there's a couple of interesting things that came up during Worlds. But at the same time, I'm never looking at the army ever again. You can quote me on that.
Well, thank you very much, Owen. That was very good. So, and what a good one to end on. So that's it. That's the end of our...
I've got this play, Alex.
Oh, have you? From Worlds? Yeah.
No, I wasn't at Worlds.
Go on then, Darren. Go on, misplay.
It's not even Warhammer related. It's the other day. I'm in my 40s, Alex, and I went to a day rave.
Nice.
And don't ever fucking do that.
Is that the misplay? Is that it?
That's the misplay. Yeah. Brilliant.
So there you go. I said you got health advice at the start and you got health advice at the end. So don't say this podcast doesn't help you all. Thanks, Aaron. No worries. Right. So that's all that's left for me to say is thanks very much, Rune, for coming on, and congratulations again for winning the whole thing.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And maybe we'll see. We'll get you on again next year if you go two-time champion. So
three times.
So yeah, but and as I said at the start, do please check out Rune's Twitter thread. It is great for kind of more insights into the matchups and how his list works. It's really, really worth. So yeah, so thank you again for coming on, Darren, Owen. Pleasure as always.
Thanks.
Yeah, just want to shout out the whole Danish team as well because they were a real proper team there. So yeah, I know a couple of them, but yeah, props to everybody. They were the people's champs for sure. I think everybody wanted them to win, so just wanted to put that on record.
Right. And thanks to all of you for coming along, listening and getting us to do more of these. We'll try and do some more mini-sodes as well, because everyone supposedly wants to listen to our rubbish, so we'll try and do some more mini-sodes. So, but thanks again, everyone. Be kind, look after each other, and we'll catch you all next time. So cheers, bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.